Social Media Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. This is episode number 65, and I am your host, DJ Chuang. Thank you for tuning in for yet another episode in the ongoing conversation with church leaders everywhere, mostly in the United States, because this is where I live, and wherever the internet allows me to reach and sync up with a church leader that is actively using social media. I love to talk with you and talk with them and add the conversation here on the Social Media Church Podcast. And on this episode, I will share with you a conversation I had with a Lutheran pastor who lives about half an hour north of where I live. I am here in Aliso Viejo, which is considered South Orange County. And the Lutheran pastor I connected with is also a fellow podcaster. Lives up there in Huntington Beach, California, known as Surf City. And one of the best beaches along the coast here. But before we get to the conversation we recorded, I want to share with you a voicemail that came in from Brian in Montana.
Hey, DJ, this is Brian from Montana, and today I'm doing a seminar for our group of churches on how to use Facebook and other social media platforms for ministry. Just wanted to say thanks for all that you're doing with the podcast. Just got most of what I'm going to communicate today from your podcast, other podcasts like it, and just really appreciate the work that you're doing. I'd love to hear an interview that would just walk through a step-by-step process of what churches to do to launch a more viable Facebook or social media presence. And I know a lot of your podcasts do that, but I was wondering if there's just some experts out there that just say, hey, this is next. And I know that the Guide Church Method covers that a little bit too, but thanks for all you're doing, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Brian, thanks so much for those kind words. I'm so glad that you're listening and that you've found our episodes helpful to you as you shared some practical tips about using social media with some Christians and church leaders there in Montana. And thanks for the request about a step-by-step instruction about how to develop a social media presence online, and that sounds like it would be much longer than just a half hour episode, and so I may need to defer that to some of my other colleagues that are great at providing instruction for how to do step-by-step kind of things on using social media. Part of it is in the strategy section of things, developing your customized workflow and process for developing content. And then the other half is walking people through on a screen share or something where you show people click here, type this here, click this over here, and use this pull down over there. And so there's kind of two aspects to your question as I think out loud about what it would take to provide the step-by-step instruction. And one of the past guests that we've had here on Social Media Church is Justin Wise, who is now launching his own business as well as training academy called the Think Digital Academy. And that is one excellent curriculum with content that steps you through some coaching as well as curriculum and content to help you develop a social media strategy and presence. And I think that's a course that you should take a look at as you are looking to learn how to do social media better. So I'll add a link in the show notes for you to check out Justin Wise's Think Digital Academy, and wish him the best of luck as he launches his business. And Justin is the other Lutheran pastor that I've gotten to know over the past couple years. And in my networking and relationships with evangelical pastors across the country, through my work and just kind of through my personal ministry, because I love connecting with people, I haven't had the opportunity to connect with many Lutherans. And I'm not sure exactly why, but as I got to know Pastor David Householder, who is a Lutheran pastor and well-versed in Lutheranism, that it's a younger denomination, as he was describing it to me, and they have their own tribe and their own rhythms of how they do church, and they don't exactly mix it up with the mainstream evangelicals. Another tribe that doesn't mix it up too much is Nazarenes, but they're also a sizable denomination. The ones that seem to be in the quote-unquote mainstream of Christian conferences and books are the likes of Baptists and Presbyterian, some Methodists, and those are kind of the big three that I think of when I think of the denominations that are in the mainstream evangelical mix, and then you've also got tons of non-denominational churches. Anyways, let me get back to the conversation I want to share with you. So I've gotten to know Pastor David over the past few months, and I think we first connected because he saw an article about me in the Orange County Register, and so we've been connecting over Twitter, and then we've met up a couple times in person. He has a beautiful home right near downtown Huntington Beach, and he pastors a normal-sized church, about 150 on a regular weekend. And we sat down and had a great conversation just about ministry and how his church is using social media. And he has some thoughtful perspective of just how social media is creating a different culture and changing the very institution, organization of the church. And so we didn't just talk about the social media, we also talked about just how social media is changing the church, and kind of a good follow-up to our previous episode where we talked about the church and the social media revolution. Here's my recent conversation with Pastor David Householder, pastor of Robin Wood Church in Huntington Beach, California.
DJ Chuang here for the Social Media Church podcast. Today I'm talking with Pastor David Householder of Robin Wood Church in Huntington Beach, California. You are a normal pastor of a normal-sized church, so would you tell our listeners about Robin Wood Church and how the community started getting engaged in social media?
Yeah, we couldn't be a more average church. We really couldn't. We're a church of, we had 155 people a couple weeks ago and 115 people last week. So we're a pretty average-sized church. We meet in the building of another church. We've been around for 7 years. We're ethnically and economically very diverse. And we really are nothing special in the church world in that sense. Of course, we're special in the eyes of the Lord, but as far as churches go and sociology goes, we're garden variety church, and it happened organically. And I think a lot of social media stuff is better when it's not a program, when it just happens organically, and when the people who are best at social media just naturally rise to the top in the church. And I think that social media has two big impact areas on the church. One is in information sharing and teaching, and the other one is in just socializing and communication and community building. I'll talk about the community building first. I think it's one of the best ways to keep track of people that there has ever been. A lot of churches have been under some financial stress since the beginning of the Great Recession, especially in Southern California, where the cost of doing business is so very expensive, and wages are higher than the rest of the country just to compensate for that. And building space is extremely expensive. So a lot of churches have been pretty leveraged since 2007 and have had to lay off staff or have had to cut hours. And things that aren't seen as essential have often been cut. And so a lot of church activity has suffered because of that, because even if you have all volunteers, you need some staff to help drive the volunteers, motivate the volunteers, and organize the volunteers. So it's been challenging to keep the shepherding going for a lot of medium churches and smaller churches, and it's been tough. And one of the best ways to do that is through social media. You can keep track of almost everybody through social media, and it's not just a young person's thing or an old person's thing. It's very multi-generational. We've got a lot of grandparents on Facebook and other forms of social media, and a lot of younger people and everything in between. And if you just want to kind of stay a part of people's lives and say hello on their birthdays and see how things are going, at least 5 or 6 times today on social media, I was able to keep track of people
And we have one gentleman who's in the hospital getting a pretty major surgery, and that was delayed. And I found out on social media that it was delayed. And I also found out that he likes crossword books and not flowers, so I'm going to bring him a crossword book, which I already bought today. And I would never have found that out if it wasn't for social media and somebody talking about how this guy likes crosswords. So those kind of little things add a personal touch. People think that social media is just totally impersonal, but it really can add a personal touch. I don't think it'll ever substitute for one-on-one conversations that are really important, those depth conversations we have with people, prayer ministry, counseling sessions. Those things need to be in person, but casual contact, the kind of contact you have with a Christmas card, is you can pretty much do it all year long now, and you can know your congregation so very much better.
Yeah, and that's what I loved about hearing your story of how Robin Wood Church and how you yourself is using social media. There's a pastoral aspect as well as a relational aspect, because some other churches, the larger ones and even some smaller ones, they use social media as a broadcast medium, if you would, as a way to advertise and announce events. And those are some of the ways you could use it, but there's this whole other dimension that your church has really leaned into. I mean, you've got tell us about the Facebook group page that you have, where people really are connecting with one another and not just with you.
Well, yeah, exactly. We've got two Facebook presences, if you can say that, for Robin Wood Church. One of them is a private group with about 600 people on it, and one is a Facebook page with close to 500 people on it. As fans, they call it, or likes, or whatever it's called. That's used mostly for broadcasting, but I don't think it's nearly as important as the group. We broadcast on the page. That's for the public. That's for everyone to see. If someone's searching for Robin Wood Church, that's what they'll find is the page, not the group. And we tell people what's upcoming and all that, but I don't really think that many people pay attention to it. Whereas the group, which is a closed group, it's a private group, a lot of people really enjoy that because it's private enough to put up prayer concerns. And every day we have two or three of those that are posted. And we find out who's in the hospital and how long they're going to be there and who's going to see them next and what they need prayer for. And we just ask them ahead of time, is it okay if we post that you're in the hospital? They always have said so far, sure, we'd love it if you do that. And we are able to keep track of people. I had a young woman in the hospital last week, and I went to visit her in the hospital. I says, is it okay if I post your condition here so people can pray for you? She said she'd love that. And the whole church basically kept track of her until this week even, and she mentioned something funny about her and her boyfriend on a post, and a bunch of people from the church chimed in and said, are you feeling better now that you're home? And that's kind of touching to see that. So I think it's really good for social stuff, and it's best probably in a church our size. I think if you got a lot bigger, it might get a little bit more difficult in a large Facebook group. But when you have a few hundred people, it works out really, really well, because there's always a lot of activity there in the Facebook group itself.
Well, that's really neat. Sometimes we don't hear enough about the normal-sized churches and the community and the spiritual life that can really happen in an engaging and rather effective manner. So that's really neat to hear. So in addition to praying for one another and staying in touch, what other topics have been recurring themes for your community?
Well, for our community, the biggest topic lately has been moving, because we moved to a new site on the 405 between Springdale and Westminster, where the In-N-Out Burger is. And we were able to take pictures all the way along and post those pictures so we could invite people. And what I used it for, this is kind of interesting, I posted a really beautiful picture of the inside of the church that somebody else took and posted it on Facebook, and I was like, can I borrow that? They said, sure. So I took a copy of that, and I sent out personal Facebook messages to people who hadn't been in church for a long time and said, hey, look at this beautiful new building we're in. I hope you'll show up. It'd be great to see you. And sure enough, many of those people came, and I think it was because I was able to send them a picture quickly and easily. And so we've got people coming back to church now because of that kind of personal touch. One of the guys in my men's group took a picture, and I took it off of our men's group thing and send it out to other people, and there it was. And so people could keep track of the move as it was happening. You know, are we having the young adults meeting tonight at the new site or the old site? Are we going to have children's ministry? Is there going to be a nursery over there? Those kinds of things were really easy to communicate. And so other themes, though, people occasionally put things up that are sort of activistic in nature, and some of those are real positive, you know, missions type things and everything. But occasionally you get one or two people that post a little bit too much, and they start to kind of take over the page. And so we've had to limit people to posting once a day, and that's a rule. We're not legalistic about that. And they can comment all they want, but some people get really into a certain cause, the certain cause that they're for, and they'll post like four or five times a day. And next thing you know, nobody else is posting because it just sort of burns the grass, even if it's a good thing. And so we've had to very graciously talk with some people saying, you know, we really want you to help us make sure that this page is for everybody and not just for, you know, a few causes and things. And they get a little upset at first. They say, well, you know, this is the most important cause in the world. They say, well, yeah, for you it is, but there's other causes too. And we want to make sure everybody gets a chance to talk. But that's kind of the same thing you do in a small group if someone's talking too much. You have to kind of make sure that everyone gets a chance to talk.
Yeah, the skill of facilitation online is just as important, if not more so, than leading a small group.
Oh, yeah. It's exactly the same kind of thing. And so the socializing thing is really strong, and I think that makes a big difference. Plus, I have my own page, and I post a lot on my own page, my own personal page under my name, David Householder, and then people can see what I'm doing. In a small church, I think it's really important to be transparent and that people know what you're doing. The person who runs our Facebook page says, we'd like you to post every Tuesday on what Pastor House is up to and what you've been doing this week. And people really like that. They like to have a little sense for what you're doing and what your family's up to. And I think that if you want to kind of keep your private life separate from your ministry, I'm not sure if ministry is a great calling. I think there's something about just being transparent and having a bit of authenticity with your life. I think that's really key. I don't think it just feels healthier that way.
Yeah, well, and you know what? The thing about technology and social media, it's actually added a whole other dimension of transparency. Even when I was going through seminary in the 90s, there was kind of the discomfort and the concern of how ministry life and being a pastor, you're like living in a fishbowl. Well, now it's not just the pastor living in a fishbowl. It's like all of us have our lives that could be seen online, and it's going to come with good feedback, also bad feedback. But, you know, if we're truly living and walking for Christ, it's a tremendous opportunity for us to show the work of Christ in us and allow the light to shine.
Well, I think there's been a lot less hypocrisy, too. I think that throughout the church, not just with pastors, I think that people are posting about their lives. And you'll see people out at their anniversary dinner with a glass of wine, and they'll be smiling. And probably 15 years ago in a lot of churches, they wouldn't have wanted that picture out there. And they would have still had that glass of wine, but they wouldn't have shown it. Whereas now there's a lot more integrity between a person's inside and outside world, and there's a lot less hiding of things. So I think it's been good for society in that way, kind of opening things up and letting us see what's going on. I don't think we have any business in people's private affairs, of course, but I do think that there's a certain level of casual public affairs, which is kind of fun to keep track of people with.
It does allow us to have the small talk, starter conversations, as well as which can easily translate into the offline in-person conversations and kind of getting a running start of meeting people and connecting with people.
Well, you and I met online, and then we started to meet in person occasionally. And so that's how that goes. It often leads to personal friendships and colleague-type situations and ministry situations that never would have happened otherwise.
Yes, bingo. And we also notice, and you've given some good thought about this, how social media has also changed the shape of pastoring and the whole institution of the church. So speak to that a bit.
Oh, it definitely has. I think that's been challenging, and it's been a real benefit for the typical church member, but it's been a real liability for pastors. And the pastors, we used to be the sage on a stage. We were the person who were educated. We'd been to seminary, Bible college, whatever. And we had the years of book knowledge that we had in our heads and nobody else had access to, because there's no theological seminaries in most neighborhoods. And you just knew an awful lot. And the purpose of seminary was to pour years of reading material into someone's head so that when they went out into the parish ministry, that they would have a real good overview in their memory of what church has been about and how theology works and how the Bible's put together. And we were very valuable in society at that time. And with the communication revolution that's come on now, everybody in my church has more access to theological and historical and whatever information on their phones and biblical information than I ever could learn in my whole lifetime. You know, they can get it in a couple of minutes at the latest. And so basically your value as a pastor has gone down in the community because you are no longer the information repository. People wanted to hear in-depth Bible teaching and the kind of thing that the engaged kind of theological stuff, they pretty much had to come to church on Sunday. And that is simply no longer true. There's 400 people who do better podcasts than I'll ever preach. And so, I can't compete with that. So I've got to shift my role a little bit. But what I say, again, this is an advantage to our typical church members because they're able to have access to way more than I could have ever given them. And the ones who are the most motivated are highly they're accessing this at a very high level, which is really fun. But I have to shift my role into that more of a community builder and leader and motivator. And what I know isn't that important anymore. And so I have to kind of rethink that. And a lot of pastors in small churches are having to move towards a tent-making situation because they can no longer afford to support themselves full-time on the salary in a small or medium-sized church. And so they've had to rethink their vocations a little bit as far as that goes. And I think pastors also lost a little bit of their authority that they used to have when they used to just have intellectual you ever play a game with your brothers growing up where you kind of knuckle each other under? You could hit anything theologically and historically and biblically because you knew more than everybody. And so you were kind of revered in the community, and you just don't anymore. And you don't have access to more information than they do. So you're much more of a peer than you were maybe 30 years ago. And you're not held in instantly as high regard. And you're doing things that appears to other people that they could do too. And they're probably right. So I think our role is going to change. I think there always is going to be a need for leadership. I don't think it's just going to be casual, informal, because that just tends to fall apart. There needs to be some leadership and some structure. But I think it's going to change a lot, and it's going to be great for the congregations. A little tough on some of us, I think.
Yeah, you're right in terms of just how much information we have at our fingertips, literally. But there's still very much a vital role for the pastor, and it is changing as we speak. The one that I hear of a lot is when I connect with younger people and younger leaders and next generations in the 20s and 30s, is the number one need that they have is for mentors and role models.
Yeah.
And I think those of us who are older, I mean, I'm 47, there's definitely a need, a place for pastors to be that role model of living with wisdom rather than just information at our fingertips.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think the mentoring is key. And I think most pastors who are can mentor 3, 4, 5, even 6 people. And if they're gifted, you know, Jesus gifted up to maybe 12 like he did. But it's not something you can do large scale. I've worked my way up to 5 and 6 with the young people that I'm mentoring. You know, I'd be meeting with them on this Saturday night. But you really can't do more than that. And so the whole idea of having these large congregations that you lead, I don't know if that's going to be real feasible as far as leadership goes. And actually mentoring large numbers of people. So there's really no better way to mentor people than smaller student to class ratios. So it's I think the quality of that's going to go up. I really do. But I think some of the quantity of it might suffer a little bit from that. I think a lot of people used to just go into ministry, just going to big seminary classes, whereas now you really do need that mentor and that wisdom to help you through all of the different all the different rapids and stuff on the whitewater rafting of ministry.
Well, these are definitely interesting times, and technology's kind of accelerated and exacerbated how much we have to learn and keep up with. So where do you see all this headed?
Well, I really do think we're headed into a whole new generation because it's bigger than any change any of us has ever seen in the past, and probably bigger than any change that's been for a good 500 years. It was 1517 when the Protestant Reformation started, and it developed in tandem with the development of the printing press, and that changed everything. The Protestant Reformation is unthinkable without the printing press. There's no way it would have happened the way it happened, because the printing press gave wings to the words of the Reformation, and what was called a flugschrift was invented, flying words, flying writing, literally. And the flugschrift was an inexpensive pamphlet, and you could produce them by the thousands with the printing press. And you could send those things out, and you could cover Europe with them and change opinions in a matter of weeks in a big way. And so that was just a huge revolution. And you went from people going to church in stone cathedrals, sitting on the floor and waiting for the bell to ring and going up and getting communion while the choir and the priest were singing to each other in a language you didn't know. And I went from that in one generation to people tightly packed in groups of about 200 around a pulpit where someone was standing in a pulpit, which was really a big sound system. And it was made of wood that vibrated and the whole thing, and so that everybody could hear. And they were tightly wrapped around this pulpit with a Bible and a hymn book. And they were literate, and they were reading, and they were studying along with the pastor, and they were singing songs together that they were reading together. And worship changed entirely in a period of a generation because of the printing press and because of the fact that the Bible went from costing about as much as a tricked-out SUV, because you used to have somebody by hand copy the thing, and it took about a year for someone to do that well, and it had to be an educated person, so that was an expensive proposition. And within a generation, the Bible had dropped in cost to the equivalent today of a few dollars. And that changed everything. And we're on the verge of, we're right in the middle of a shift that's happening just like that right now. And that's the electronic communication revolution, where everybody has access to everyone in the world for free. That's a whole new thing. It's an entirely new thing. And it's going to radically change the way we do church. So the shift from traditional to contemporary worship is nothing compared to what's going to be happening in the next few years as the millennial generation, which is raised with this stuff, goes into adulthood and starts using these tools. I can't even I literally can't even imagine what's going to happen.
Yeah, and we're definitely in the midst of it. So thanks for sharing some perspective on that, some historical perspective. We can definitely learn a bit from just how revolutionary the printing revolution was. And then now we're in the middle of the digital revolution. And so we definitely have a huge opportunity to really engage that. And for yourself and myself, we're both podcasters. So you're also literally using your voice in the digital space to share your passion and what you're learning about life and liberty. So tell us a little bit about the story behind that podcast, and we'll wrap up this conversation.
Well, Life and Liberty is my podcast, and you can find it at thornheart.com. I've been doing that since January, and I've been encouraged by a lot of people in media to get started with this, because it's the content is the one thing in the new media world which will never go away. That content is becoming more and more and more important, because everybody is producing, everybody's podcasting, everybody's publishing. The number of books published in the United States was a record last year. And so we've got everybody broadcasting and printing. And so what differentiates what gets heard from what doesn't is the quality. And so content is so very, very important. And so everybody going into ministry right now, we're in a communication, it's a communication and community enterprise. And so we have to get really good at communicating. And a lot of us, to our chagrin, are finding out that a lot of our ideas just aren't at all interesting to people. The things we used to preach on, people were just being polite with. And now we can tell with social media what kind of ideas really get attention and which ones don't. And it's a little humbling for those of us who've been communicating for most of our adult lives that a lot of what we've been saying has been very ineffective, because getting it heard is so much more important than getting it said. And so The trick in new media is getting it heard, because anybody can get it said. And a lot of people are getting it said. So we're working on that in a big way to try to spread the gospel in such a way that it can be heard, because there's never been an opportunity like there is right now to reach everyone on the planet with the good news of Jesus. And I think we're looking at a time where this is really becoming possible in a big way. Bible translations now are mostly going out, new Bible translations, and electronics, not even, they're just skipping print forms altogether in some of these new languages that the Bible is going into. And it's happening so very quickly that we are on the verge of an amazing breakthrough. But we're going to have to learn how to make sure the message gets heard, because the gospel never changes, but the way people listen does. And so we have to make sure that we have our most gifted people sharing the gospel in such a way that it can indeed get heard.
Well, that's so cool. Well, great talking with Pastor David, and I'll add a link in the show notes for people to connect with you, as well as to check out your podcast, Life and Liberty. Thank you for connecting with me again, and I hope to see you again in person soon.
Well, bless you, DJ. You're a treasure to all of us who do work in ministry and social media. We love to follow your work. We love to see what you're doing, because we learn something from you every time we talk to you.
Thank you, Pastor David, for joining me on the Social Media Church podcast and having a great conversation with me. I felt really at ease and just conversational, and we didn't really stick to a script. I mean, we were just bantering and chatting, and you, the listeners, can listen in. You can check the show notes at socialmediachurch.net to connect with Pastor David, and you'll also want to check out his podcast called Life and Liberty, and he has made some good connections between our spiritual freedom as well as our liberty as Americans, the freedom that we have in American society. And he's also the founder of a new church-based curriculum to help people grow in discipleship in small groups. And that's called the Blackberry Bush. So I'll add a link in the show notes for that. And I think it would be okay if I just grab the audio from their introductory video to share with you, so you can get a quick overview of how that curriculum could help you and your church to reach people who don't know Christ, as well as to strengthen the discipleship of people who are already a part of your community. Here's a quick overview of the Blackberry Bush.
Hello, I'm Pastor Jim Ball. I want to welcome you to the Blackberry Bush Course website. At the Blackberry Bush Course, we are here to help you connect with people that are inside, outside, and around your church throughout your entire community. We still believe that the church is God's best remedy for our broken and hurting society. We believe in the miracle of changed lives from the inside out, just as Jesus modeled during his time on earth. The Blackberry Bush Course is not just another study that you put on a shelf after a few sessions, but rather it's a course with a process that creates a growth environment that is a catalyst of authentic relationships, meaningful conversations, resulting in changed lives. So whether you're a patriarch of the faith or someone brand new just learning about faith, the Blackberry Bush Course is for you. To learn more about the Blackberry Bush Course, you can check out our FAQ section on this website, or you can experience a more in-depth overview by signing up for one of our free webinars, along with the sample course demo that is on this page. But I would really encourage you to go ahead and get started right away. $499 gets you access to the course and all of its resources for the next 18 months, regardless of the number of participants. So go ahead and let us help you help others make the life-changing connection through the Blackberry Bush course. And again, I want to thank you for your time and visiting our website today.
And as we wrap up this episode, you may have noticed a little bit of difference in the acoustics of this episode. I'm using a linear PCM recorder called the Tascam DR05. And I'm sitting out here in front of my house. It's another beautiful day here in Southern California. And I thought I'd just change the environment and be a little more casual on this episode. So if you notice a little difference in how the sound is coming through as you listen to this episode compared to some of the other ones, that's what's going on. It's a recording that I made outdoors. And I think if this turns out well, I may record more on the go, because this allows me to record without having to sit at the computer and being in front of GarageBand. And here at the Social Media Church podcast, we'd love to have you join the conversation. So call in on our voicemail line. The number is 949-354-3216. You can also connect with us on Twitter and Facebook and even Google+. The links are all there at socialmediachurch.net. An email address is there. You can email me at socialmediachurch.net. For those of you that are new to the Social Media Church podcast, be sure to subscribe using iTunes or whatever podcatcher app that you like. And if you happen to be on iTunes, be sure you click on the rating as well as the review section so that others can find this podcast more easily. And let's continue the conversation so that we can help the church at large to use social media better and for the sake of the gospel. Signing off now, this is DJ Chuang for the Social Media Church podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. And until next time, we'll stay connected online.